I think living it and seeing that effect that it has on your own husband when you know that he's being told to be strong for me.
Yeah.
Who gives someone else the right to say be strong for me? Yeah. I want him to show me emotion, actually. That's what I needed in that moment. I needed to know that we were on the same page.
The Still Parents podcast is proudly supported by Global's Make Some Noise. Click details in the description to find out more.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to this episode of the Still Parents podcast supported by Global's Make Some Noise. I am Dan here, as always, from the Lily May Foundation with Ryan and Matt. How are you, gents? Are you okay?
Buenos dias.
You all right there, Ryan?
Yeah, I'm fine, thanks.
How are you, Matthew?
Very well, thank you.
And our special guest joining us in the studio, I would like to thank you very much for taking the time to come and join us. Her name is Lauren. Lauren Hinks, am I saying that correctly?
You are, yes.
Thank you very much for joining us, Lauren. How are you? Are you well? Are you okay?
I'm good, thank you, yes.
Lovely stuff. Now, what do you do for a living?
I run an Etsy shop.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I sell cards for bereaved parents and their families. So yeah. Christmas, birthday, sort of seasonal things.
You're the first Etsy person I've met.
Oh, lovely.
Yeah. Is that like different? I don't know much about this stuff. Eh? Is it much different?
Clearly not.
Is it much different to? Is like eBay?
I'd say it's more homemade. Most people on Etsy, it's things that people make themselves.
More of an artier version of it.
Yeah. Oh, so it's like bespoke, so they can.
Yes. So I have set designs, maybe, but my thing that I work on is people can add their own baby's names, so they can change the words to the cards to suit them, the ages, the. You know, they can add their own message inside if they want to.
Yeah, so it's all like personalised stuff.
Yeah, and mostly aimed at the lost community. Yeah. So birthday in the stars is the main thing that I go for. People can, again, change the wording to heavenly birthday if that's something that they resonate with more. But yeah, and prints, so where they can include all their family members, whether they are here or whether they are or not.
I wouldn't be doing my job at this point if I didn't say, how can people get in touch with you if they would like to find out more?
I have an Etsy page called Love from Luna. It's named after our rainbow daughter, Luna.
Okay.
Or I have an Instagram called Rupert and Our Rainbow. And that's where I mainly do all of my sort of lost community stuff from.
If anyone now does not go and check out that site, then you are no longer allowed to listen to the podcast. This always feels like the part of the show where I feel like I'm doing a bit of an interrogation or prying. So tell me to F off if you feel free to do so. Are you married, engaged, in a relationship right now?
Married. We will have been married 7 years this year.
I've got a good question.
Yeah, okay.
What date did you get married and when did you first meet?
Mm. We got married on the 3rd of August.
Isn't it amazing how women could just boom
straight away?
Yes. I think he would. I think he would remember.
Okay.
Yeah. And we met 10 years ago this year. We'll have been together 10 years in
what
December.
Date?
3rd of December.
What time?
on an evening. We were very drunk.
it's brilliant. Ryan's bang on. Every male guest that we've had on, and I'm pretty confident in saying every, not one of them has just gone and said it with as much conviction as that.
Yeah, with the conviction.
Most times we ask, and the reply will be along the lines of,
there's a pause. There's always a pause.
Yeah. And then one of my favourites was, it was one of our boxing episodes, lads. He goes, I think I've been married either 7, 8, or 9, nearly 10 years.
Yeah.
How long have you guys been together, you and Jade?
Pretty sure it's, again, I think it's 8, I think it's 9 in end of May. Between 7 and 10, let's stick with that. Someone said too long.
Men are just not the same. No. You just do not work the same as women. We know everything.
Yeah, there you go.
As you have just proved.
Yeah.
Should we finish the podcast now?
Yeah.
So you said you were drunk when you
were... We were. Yeah. Different life. Very different life.
It's often the way, isn't it?
He wasn't supposed to be on that night out.
Oh, really?
Yeah, he was supposed to be in Worcester and their taxi got cancelled, so he ended up in Redditch in Fever. I don't know if anyone's ever been to Fever in Redditch, but...
Fever. Yeah. Is that like a 70s club?
It's Pop World now.
Oh, there we go. Yeah. Was it got a spinning dance floor?
No,
like
I wish.
The one on Broad Street?
I wish.
Does it smell of vomit?
Oh, don't they all? Don't they all? So yeah, it was drunken night.
Were you out with your friends? And who approached who?
Oh, do you know what? I actually can't remember that. Yeah. But I do remember that I said to him, Are you ginger? Because he's got quite auburn hair. And I think he thought I was about to take the mick out of him. So he went, no. And I went, oh, that's a shame. I quite like redheads. And he went, oh, no, I am ginger. You just can't see it in the light. So he quickly changed his mind.
Oh, fantastic. What's his name?
Jack.
Jack, big ups, Jack.
Jack.
Hi, Jack.
What's Jack do for a living?
So, alongside the Etsy shop, we are actually both now parent carers to our two living children. They both have a genetic condition called Fragile X syndrome. Fragile X syndrome.
Right, okay.
And it's something that I am the carrier of, but didn't know.
Is it common? How common is it?
Not really. Yeah. It's more common, I think, than some genetic conditions, which I will talk about later on, because Rupert actually had a genetic condition as well.
Right, okay.
So it affects boys more than it does girls.
Okay.
So our eldest is 8, but developmentally he is maybe 1.5.
Oh, okay.
So he's completely nonverbal. Didn't walk until he was 5.
Wow. Yeah.
It finds life very hard.
Yeah.
And it's very hard to care for a child with such complex needs. And then Luna is our rainbow daughter. She will be 4 this year. And she also has Fragile X syndrome. And she is affected, but less so than Noah. So she is starting to talk.
Okay.
Which is, when you come from having a non-verbal child, it's amazing.
Yeah.
She actually said last week, love you, mummy.
Oh.
And I've waited.
Did you cry?
Oh, so many tears.
Can you imagine that? Wow.
It's wonderful. Mm. But they've got quite high needs. And so it takes us both to sort of give them what they need.
So there's a lot going on.
Life has taken a different direction many times, actually, over the last 10 years. But we do what we can.
Okay, well, thank you. If anyone wants to know any more information about that, Fragile X syndrome, there'll be a link in the description for the episode. So let's get into your story then with Rupert. In your own time, and take as long as you need, in as much detail as you wish to give, leave out any bits that you don't wish to give, to talk us through the story of the pregnancy leading up to the loss of Rupert, and Matt and Ryan will jump in with some questions throughout the proceedings. And start wherever you would like to start.
I think it's first of all quite nice to talk about him. I don't think now he would turn 5 this year, and I think as time goes on, you don't get as many opportunities to tell their full story. So
Matt's nodding his head.
It's really lovely to actually have that moment. Yeah. So we obviously already had Noah. And we knew there were genetic things going on with Noah. He'd been given a diagnosis of a genetic deletion. And so he then had further genetic testing done and they couldn't see anything else. And at that point we said, we can handle the genetic deletion. We know what's going on. So it's our time now. We feel we can try for another baby.
Okay.
And so we tried for 5 months with no success.
Yeah.
And we were going to, it sounds so silly saying this now, we were going to not try again because it would have meant that we would have been quite close to our son's birthday. And we were naive enough before being in the lost world that we didn't want 2 children born too close together.
Right.
As if you think you have that luxury, that becomes a luxury. You hear people talk about it now when they say, oh, we want our baby to be a summer baby. And you think, wow, if only life was that simple.
Yeah. I guess it feels like such an insignificant thing to even consider, isn't it?
Yeah. But before loss, I think you think you've got that privilege.
As you said, it's naivety, isn't it?
Yes, it 100% is. But we really, we thought, well, we'll give it one more month. And we got pregnant that month. And I remember thinking, wow, the universe has listened to us and granted us this pregnancy.
Yeah.
And again, looking back, you think, gosh, that was naive of me to think that just means, you get pregnant, you're going to have a baby.
You've said a word which comes up a lot, naivety. Because why would you? Why would you anyway?
You hear of it, but I don't think you ever think that it's going to be you. You just don't, do you? So you see the two lines, you see the positive pregnancy test and you think you're bringing a baby home.
Yeah.
And I was very sick with Rupert. I had so much morning sickness.
Oh, okay.
And I'd had quite a lot of morning sickness in my first pregnancy, so I didn't think anything of it.
Was it worse this time?
So much worse.
Right.
And I really struggled.
Yeah.
And I think when you are pregnant for your second time and you've already got a living child, that feels harder anyway because you're trying to parent at the same time as morning sickness, which is difficult.
And that was Noah, wasn't it?
Yes.
How old was Noah at the time, sorry, when you got pregnant?
Three.
Three, okay.
Yes. And I'll talk about it later, but people often now think, they wonder why there's such a big age gap between Noah and Luna. And you think, well, there shouldn't be.
Yeah.
But again, that's the naivety of other people, which I will probably talk about later on.
Yeah.
So I had a few early scans due to some pregnancy bleeding, which again was quite normal for me. I'd had that with Noah, so I didn't think anything of it. And every time, baby was fine and everything seemed fine. And then I remember in our scan, I actually thought we had a really, really rude sonographer because I was really excited and talking and making loads of comments. And she just wasn't saying anything back to me. And I remember thinking, my goodness, why is she in this job if she can't share
communicate.
My excitement? And I remember saying something like, they are growing as they should be, aren't they? Or, you know, something really...
Try and get some information, I guess. Yeah.
And she said, yes, but I don't like the fluid that I can see around your baby's head. And only looking back now do I realise that she wasn't being rude. She was wondering how she was going to break my heart.
What week was this? What week were you
12.
At?
12. 12. That was... I said, what does that mean? But the moment I said it, I was already crying because... It's not going to be something good. Mm. She said, I don't like the fluid that I can see. And it was 2021, so we were still in a weird post-pandemic state. Mm. I was wearing a mask. There was a screen between me and Jack. So he couldn't instantly get to me. I was crying while wearing this mask, trying to breathe through it. We weren't allowed in the same waiting rooms, but we're allowed in the same room. But
and you live together.
I've said this before. I just when you look back at some of the shit that we had to go through, that you live together.
Yeah.
You're having a baby together.
Yeah.
It's all right, though, because you're in a force field when you're in hospital you've got a screen in between. Which knobhead came up with those rules?
It makes no sense whatsoever.
And actually, I guess if you are going through pregnancy normally, maybe you don't notice that as much, but when you suddenly need that person next to you because you've just been told the worst news you can ever have, why is there a screen there?
Yeah.
That he now needs to move out of the way to comfort me.
It's just mind-boggling.
And I remember they sort of led us off to a side room and said, we'll explain, you know, in more detail. And I had to walk past a lady who I'd been sat with in the waiting room because it was fine to sit next to her, but not next to my husband.
They were making things up, weren't they?
Yeah,
literally
just
were.
The whole time.
Like, doesn't it just...
You guys, sorry, I don't mean to laugh, but it's funny.
It's so silly.
There was just so many moronic decisions made that had no... empathetic thinking behind
them. Precisely that.
Because, I mean, we've obviously interviewed many dads who went through baby loss in COVID where you had dads that were sat in cars in the car park.
That's
where
they're,
and there were phone calls coming out to them saying, oh, you're allowed in the hospital now. We've just delivered the worst news possible to your wife
and
or
he's
to
sat
your
in his
partner.
Car paying £8 an hour parking.
Exactly. Yeah. Because some Div came up with some ridiculous ruling that it's okay, you can have sex with each other, but it's but you can't possibly, you know, contaminate COVID with each other when you're sat in a bloody sonography room.
But you can sit next to a stranger.
I can sit next to
You can spend your whole life together, but you can't do this in the hospital.
I mean, we can tell you which Burke was in charge of this because he spent time in the jungle and he should have been left in the frigging jungle far as I'm concerned. But like, you know, I'm like the Roy Keane of this podcast.
You are absolutely, I love it. Baby.
Sorry, Lauren. I'm
Ryan,
a soapbox.
Ryan needs to get it out of his system.
I think we all do. Yeah. I think everyone's still very mad about what they were put through.
It's very cathartic,
and especially when you go through this. And I think I'm keen to ask you as well that, like, now you can reflect on it. And obviously, we're going through what you've been through, but. Does it make you frustrated and angry that those things were in place when you were getting this news delivered
100%.
To you?
Yeah.
I think
it affected the baby loss community really deeply.
Absolutely.
And you see lots of people that, again, like you said, shared the worst news of their life.
It's extra trauma. It's almost extra trauma as well.
I'm currently looking at a tattoo, which I assume you've got on your arm, right?
Yes.
on your Instagram page, and it shows how I would view it. It shows you, Jack. It shows Noah, mm-hmm. and then it shows Rupert.
Yes.
And I would imagine that because there's no face visible, and I mean that through all of you, mm-hmm. it's very much a sort of close-knit family bond,
yeah.
right? So why haven't you got a screen in between?
I know, I know. <it. laughs>
No, but that's how stupid it is, isn't
yeah.
it?
Oh, yeah.
yeah, I know.
That shows a family.
Yeah.
It shows the love of a family, and I mean, I've got goosebumps because that to me, you see, I am covered in tattoos, and as soon as I saw that, you might have noticed as I was flicking through, I picked on it straight away. But that shows the bond of a family and the love of a family. But it's all right, we'll stick a plastic screen up in between some because we're not allowing people to have that at that time.
No, the lady who did that at the end, she wouldn't let me and Jack pay for them.
Really?
She wanted them to just give as a gift.
Were they painful?
No, part of the actually, no.
Where was the one you had not long ago, Ryan? You were sending me photos from
I believe.
Passing out. Was it on your leg?
No,
on your shin or something?
It was on my shin.
Back of my legs is the most painful. Right. I've had the back of my legs done and I would really? No, absolutely not. Would never do that again.
See, I'm getting,
how many tattoos you got then? You got a few?
13, 14.
Nice.
There you go. That was the one.
Oh.
So we digress. Well, what were we talking about just before we mentioned about the...
We're talking about being in the sonographer room.
Oh, yes.
The
fact that,
Jack had to
move.
We
walked out of the room after the scan and I had to go past a lady who I'd been sat with in the waiting room.
That's right.
And she'd been telling me how she wasn't excited at all for her pregnancy. It wasn't a planned pregnancy and she really didn't want this pregnancy. And this was the lady I was now walking past being told that my baby was not well. And I just think that's something that really needs to change. People should not be being able to see other people once they have bad news. There should be some way of taking them to a room without having to cross paths with other pregnant women because it's entirely unfair. So we were taken into a side room. Referred to fetal medicine and sort of sent on our way and sort of wait for your appointment.
How was the communication with you?
It was your baby probably won't make it to your fetal medicine scan. They're really poorly and there's nothing else we can do.
So it's very matter of fact.
Brutal.
Yeah. This probably says more about me than them, but I apologised to the midwife that I'd ruined her day.
How English of you.
Yeah. Because I felt terrible that she'd had to deliver this news to me.
I wonder why we do that. Is that like
I really don't know. A coping mechanism, maybe?
Yeah, I think so.
Shows what sort of person you are as well, though. Caring, empath, clearly, by what you do as a job.
Yeah.
It shows what sort of person you are.
But I guess in that moment, it was the... And actually, being that type of person later on when we delivered Rupert led to... some mistakes being made, which I'll talk later on when we get to Rupert's birth. But I think that sometimes being that way is not always the best way to be that people pleaser. Yeah. And I think you have to learn sometimes to be your own advocate, actually.
Yeah.
And in that moment, it wasn't up to me to apologise to her for making her day bad. But I felt, felt awful that she'd given me this bad news, even though I'm the one that the bad news was for. Maybe it was a shock of, I can't really believe this is happening.
I think you've already said it, haven't it? It's the coping mechanism and your brain's just looking for something maybe to send some diversions out.
Yeah, if I'm looking after somebody else, then I'm not, you know.
You're not the one needed to be looked after.
Mm-hmm.
Which hospital was it? Sorry, I don't know if
Worcester,
you mentioned it.
Worcester Royal.
Hospital, yeah.
And so we did go back to our fetal medicine scan. And I think once we saw the heart beating there, my attitude was, they're going to be wrong. Yeah. They are going to be wrong. This baby is going to be fine. And I remember the consultant, all they sort of wanted to talk about straight after the scan was TFMR. They were very much,
straight to
the point. Ooh. Yeah, this baby is really poorly. The fluid is worse than your scan last week. I think you need to consider ending this pregnancy. And I was absolutely not. I can't. I cannot go there. I've met or connected with a lot of parents that have had to make that decision. I think they are incredibly brave. I think it's the strongest decision you can make. We weren't strong enough in that moment. I couldn't fathom making that decision. And I was in the mindset of, they are wrong.
Yeah.
And again, naivety, I guess, I went home and I researched. So he was diagnosed with hydrops, which was fluid in the body. And I went home and I researched hydrops, and all I was looking for was the positive cases. Mm. I would not read the negative ones. Mm. I would only read the positive ones. And I would play healing music to my tummy. And I would only, I cut myself off social media because I said, I don't want to read anything negative. And I was convinced that if I stayed positive, everything would be fine.
It's like a law of attraction theory, isn't it, in a way? And there is, I mean, not sure what your beliefs are, but there is some people who say, especially with illnesses in your own body, you can, the way that you think, and I'm trying my hardest not to use the word manifest just because I hate that word, because it's every chuffing influence is using it at the minute.
Yeah.
But is that,
and it's your attitude,
it's a positive
it.
Mental mindset, isn't it? And
yeah.
obviously that's not going to fix you, but it is going to have an effect on the way your synapses, the way your brain's processing things. It is going to, it is.
And even though it didn't change the outcome, and I don't think it was ever going to change the outcome, I wouldn't change having that positive mindset, because that hope is what kept me going through the next few weeks of torture. You are living every day trying to parent your living child whilst knowing the baby that you're carrying is poorly.
Mm.
And there's nothing you can do to change that outcome. You've just got to put your faith into the universe of what is going to happen is going to happen, which is not an easy thing to do. And I think for a mum in particular who's carrying that baby, you don't get a second to switch off. You can't go, I'm not going to think about this, because that baby is part of you.
It's a constant reminder.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You're never alone. You're with that baby all the time. Mm. I think looking back, I wouldn't change how I felt in that moment. I needed to be positive for my own mental well-being. I think I needed to think, this baby's going to be okay. And then we went back the week after, and the fluid had got worse and it had started to go into the lungs. And the scan was really quick, and they took us straight into the room and they were like, this is not good. This is not going the way that, you know, we want it to go. If there was going to be improvements, it would be happening now, and it's not, it's going the other way. Yeah, okay. And I think that was the first time that my hope wavered.
Mm.
So I went, okay. You know, we're being told,
it's like the reality.
Things just aren't improving.
And we had no idea at the time what was causing this hydrops. And it becomes a little bit complicated. So when I was 7, I was taken into foster care.
Okay.
So my own medical history was quite sparse. And I didn't really know if there was anything that could be causing this. We had Noah already, so we'd already had a successful pregnancy, so I couldn't understand. I happened to have the contact details of a birth auntie, and I reached out and I said, can you help me? Is there anything that would indicate what is going on here? And she came back pretty quickly and had said that I was born with a genetic condition called incontinentia pigmenti. And as I'm sure you're doing now, going, what is that?
Why do they always give them like really...
Sounds like some Latin.
It does. Yeah.
Some complicated
name. It's like complicated name.
I'm not even sure I'm still saying it right, to be honest.
What is that?
So it's a really rare genetic condition and it's on the X chromosome. So from doing the research, it was a case of, because it's on the X chromosome, girls can have it and they can... which I'll explain it in more in detail when I talk about Luna. But girls can have it and be fine, but boys cannot survive it because they don't. So with girls, you get one X chromosome from your mum and you get one from your dad. So if I give my X chromosome to a girl, the one that comes from my husband counteracts that bad X. Does that make sense?
Yeah,
it goes, oh my gosh, this isn't a good X. And it sort of tries to fight against it and push its way through. Mm. But with a boy...
Because you're only getting the Y from the man.
Yeah. You get the Y and the X, they can't survive it. It completely takes over their body. And I think as I read that, the penny dropped for me.
Yeah.
And I said, I can see what's going on here. And I think...
So there's a link. The link is there.
Yeah, the link was there, just didn't know it. Mm. And then we went for a private scan and... we're told I was carrying a boy. And I thought, okay, I think I know where this is going. Yeah, but yeah. I still think you don't allow yourself to really believe it. You still think it could still be wrong. It could be a coincidence. But then, so that was on, say that, I think that was on the Thursday. And by the following Tuesday, we had the fetal medicine scan where she said his heart had stopped.
Right.
I think that moment is my worst moment. Yeah. It's worse than giving birth to him. It was worse than his funeral. That to me was the one moment where, and I'm sure you can see it in my face now, when I talk about it, I waver because that was the reality. That was the trapdoor. That was the one where you go.
That's where your life changes.
Shit. Nothing makes sense in that moment. Again, there's a stupid scream between you. And I'd been waiting in the waiting room on my own, and Jack had to wait out by the vending machine. So we were alone and texting each other and anxious because you're about to go into fetal medicine. We went in and we had the normal conversations about morning sickness and about all these moments. And then I remember as soon as she put the ultrasound on, the screen looked different.
Mm. Okay.
I think we looked at each other and I think we both knew before anything was said. And then the sonographer said to her assistant, can you go and get Donna? And I thought, you've never had to go and get Donna before. And again, we looked at each other and I think we knew.
Yeah.
We knew what was coming. And I don't know why, but I made myself say, he is okay, isn't he? Or he's fine, isn't he? And she put her hand on mine and said, Lauren, I'm really sorry, your baby's heart has stopped. And I screamed. Yeah. And looking back, I think the people in the waiting room must have wondered what on earth was going on because I screamed. And I screamed no, and I just repeated no, you're wrong. I didn't want them to get me up off the table. They wanted to get me into the side room. Donna must have come and checked and confirmed. I don't remember that moment because I was convinced that if I didn't get off the table, they were wrong. Mm. And it was the first thing I said to the bereavement midwife. I said, they could be wrong though. They could rescan me and I could be fine. And it took them a long time to convince me that they know for sure that this is it.
Yeah.
And I think it was only when we signed all our paperwork and it was only when we walked down and I saw the word bereavement suite and she said, this is the suite, that I broke down. Because I suddenly thought, okay, there's no going back from this. They're not actually, this isn't...
They're not playing about here. No, this is literally reality.
They're not joking. Yeah. This is where we're going. And we came out and went home. And somehow had to carry on being parents for the evening while waiting to go in the next day to deliver your baby. None of it, looking back, makes any logical sense, does it? That
not at all.
You have to carry on your life and put it to your back.
Because you've got to go home and be mummy and daddy, haven't you?
Yeah. Again. And I hate any phrase that starts with at least. So it's going to sound really bizarre that I'm about to say one, but my at least is that Noah did not understand.
Mm. Right.
We were able to hide it from him because he did not understand. And that was my only saving grace in that moment, that I didn't have to explain anything to Noah. He could just carry on being Noah. And we sort of had to put all the things into place about childcare and who was going to take him to nursery and who was going to pick him up and all the normal things. But
was he three at the time? Sorry.
Yes. Yeah. He went to nursery and we went to delivery, but none of it feels real even talking about now.
It's surreal,
feels like,
isn't it?
Yeah. It feels like a different life.
Do you talk about it much? Like talking to Ryan and Matt and myself about this now, when was or has there been a recent time that you kind of...
Not
spoke
really.
About it in this way, and I'm interested to see how you've.
Cause I think
it, when we have a guess
yes.
at how you feel
at the beginning, absolutely. I wanted to talk about it all the time, because I think it was my way of processing my reality.
Yeah.
I did have grief counselling at the beginning. It did not go well, unfortunately.
How many sessions did you have?
Only a few. But what happened was she got my children's names the wrong way around.
Oh.
And she said, I'm really sorry that Noah died and Rupert will grow up understanding all about Noah. And I, in that moment, did not correct her and put down the phone and broke down and went, I can't have a conversation with this woman ever again. And I didn't ever even confront it because I'm not good at confrontation. I just never answered the phone ever again until it stopped.
She's only got one job.
I know.
One job. Just get the bloody names right.
Did
that? What was that, Matt?
I think he's lost words.
But that's what we do every day.
I'm just playing devil's advocate here. Have you ever made a mistake in your
session? Listen, I will hold my hands up and say I have been in a session whereby, for whatever brief moment, I might have forgotten a name or gone blank. Mm. But as a professional, there is a way of then being able to speak to the person and question them that then brings you back, that reminds you. I wouldn't ever guess ever. There's just a way of being able to then bring yourself back into that. And the reason you go blank is because you're concentrating that much on something which is so emotive and so...
It's empathy. It's empathy.
That's what emotive means, mate. No, but like the...
Ryan's on today.
But it's because you are genuinely concentrating. You're in that moment that... And everybody forgets something every now and then, but I would never guess. I would make sure that...
You'd ask.
Did she say it with a lot of confidence?
No, but even if I was going to say something like that, I would make sure I bloody well knew before I... Yeah. And actually, sometimes I probably wouldn't put myself in a situation where I would say something like that. Purely for the fact that actually that's not my job.
No.
At that time, my job is not to say things like that as a bereavement support worker.
Right, okay.
My job is to allow people to get off their chest what they want to get off their chest and to offer as much guidance and support and advice as possible. That's platitudes.
Yeah.
It's difficult because I look back now and I don't hate what happened. I don't think hate towards that woman or anything. I don't think maybe she even realized the mistake that she made, but in that moment and still being in a very early vulnerable stage of grief, it's not something that you can come back from. I can't pour my heart to somebody who can't remember which one of my children died.
Absolutely. That's the most
rudimentary part of the conversation, isn't it? And you have every right. It's completely justified to have that frustration.
I saw a counsellor who tried to do some EMDR on me. This woman... You're going to screw me over. I can't remember what it stands for. It's basically rapid eye movement therapy.
Oh, okay.
So you know when you fall asleep?
When you're dreaming,
So when you fall asleep, first phase of sleep is called REM.
REM.
And that's where your eyes flicker and it's where basically you're throwing everything into certain sections of memory. And EMDR was designed primarily to start with for soldiers that were coming back from the battlefield. So it was to basically be able to process harrowing images and things like that to be able to limit the opportunity of somebody then suffering from PTSD.
Okay. All right.
So I saw a counsellor and she looked, no word of a lie, she was a spitting image of Amy Winehouse. She looked like Amy Winehouse. She had the same hair and everything. In fact, it probably was Amy Winehouse.
She didn't have her habits, did she?
Well, this is where I'm going to. This woman was waving her hand in front of my face trying to do this EMDR stuff and I just couldn't relate to this woman at all. And I saw her twice and I was just like...
Sometimes so it sounds heartless, but it's the luck of the draw, isn't it? You're just going to be linked up with someone that is just not on the, even remotely the same wavelength.
Yeah.
No.
Or the emotional intelligence are completely different areas.
And actually, I think luck of the draw is what happened to us when I gave birth to Rupert. So the midwives that we had... and this brings me back to when you said earlier the type of person that I am. So he was 16 weeks, so he was the size of my hand. He was tiny. And you could see that he was poorly. He had lots of extra fluid. But apart from that, he was perfect. He had 10 toes. He had eyes. He had nose. You know, he was a baby.
Yeah.
But because he was small and full of fluid, they struggled to get his prints. And they came and said, we're really struggling to get his prints. And I said, being the people pleaser that I am, it's fine. Don't worry about it. And 5 years later, that haunts me that I didn't push harder. And I thought, and I've thought for the last 5 years, that there was nothing else they could have done. But last October, we went back to Worcester to deliver some keepsakes that we'd made as part of Baby Loss Awareness Week. And the bereavement midwife there, who was there when we gave birth to Rupert, said that they should have come to her and she would have been able to get them. And that opened up a whole new wave of grief 5 years later because I realised that they didn't do what they were supposed to do. And even though I am a people pleaser and I said it's okay, they shouldn't have left it at that.
I feel that they still should have tried anyway, but I'm not sure if that's a consent thing. But
they basically, well, no, they should have waited a couple of hours until some of the fluid had dried from birth and tried again. She said she would have used a gauze and sort of dried him and tried again. And she said it absolutely would have been possible. And most of me wishes I didn't know that. Because it sort of made me grieve all over again. And so some people maybe who aren't in the baby loss world, it sounds like a really insignificant thing, but to me, footprints would have been everything. Mm. They are those tangible keepsakes that prove that 5 years later, your baby was real. Does that make sense?
Absolutely.
And actually, it's led me to quite a lot of what I do through Etsy and the work I offer is based around print work.
I was going to head towards that. Did that fuel in a way?
It has.
Where are you headed
and
to?
And some people would think it's a really bizarre thing to want to do because I now work with footprints regularly, but it's because I know what it feels like to not have them.
It's like you're owning that grief. That's not owning you.
You don't want anyone to go through what you went through.
No, and if they've got footprints, whatever condition that they are in, I will try my hardest to do things with them. And I really like being able to offer keepsakes that are seasonal. So like Easter prints, Christmas prints, all those type of things, because they are the things that you should still get as a parent. You should, you know, they come home from school or nursery and they've given you, know, you've got the hand. And so I like being able to allow parents to still have those moments, and it comes from a place of not having them and of knowing what it would mean to be able to have them. I want to offer it to as many people as I can now, which sometimes it's hard because sometimes, again, I'll get given prints from a baby who maybe was even a younger gestation than Rupert when they were born. And it reminds me, you could have done this for me. I could have these and I don't. But it brings me comfort that I can use that pain and that grief to give something else
exactly.
to others.
He
means something. And actually, I had a really lovely conversation with the midwife, and they are going to use Rupert's story to fuel midwife training on second trimester losses and make sure that they offer those opportunities multiple times.
So that, I mean, at least that offers a form of legacy.
And I've said, absolutely, use his story, use his name, use whatever you need to, because I know that it's not lost on him. Yes, we had a terrible experience with that, and we have had to now process and live with the fact that he wasn't treated maybe the way that he should have been. He also wasn't weighed, so we don't know how much he weighed. And she apologised and said that we don't have any... So, my personal belief, and again, I don't want to speak ill of anybody.
No, but it's
but
what you...
I believe it's because he was a second trimester loss. I believe that the care for second trimester losses is not as thought out as maybe a full-term loss or a later loss, because it's more the babies are more fragile. I think one of the midwives actually said, oh, he's the youngest gestation we've had in here for a long time, or, you know, and so I think they're not getting that day to day. I don't want anyone to ever have day to day experience of that, but do you know what I mean?
Why would they say that?
See, for me, the way I look at that, then is flip it the other way around. If that's the only one that they've had for however long, then you bloody well make sure that that person or that family has the
best experience.
Yeah, well, that's no, what I was going to say. And then I thought to myself, no, it's not the best. It's exactly what I'm trying to think.
It is in a dark way.
Yeah. Yeah, that's what I'm thinking is that that they leave here and know that there's been no stone unturned. For them to be able to walk out of that hospital and know that the hospital have done everything, or the members of staff have done everything possible to make that experience as bearable as possible for you.
Yeah.
It's treating the baby
with dignity.
There you go.
Yeah. And I think at the time, you're still in complete shock. You've never experienced it before. If you have, and it's because you've lost more than one baby and you learn from that experience, then that, you know, that's an awful way to learn how you should be treated or how you want your baby to be treated. But in that moment, you're just going with the flow because you don't know what to do.
Yeah, no.
And I think actually now, 5 years later, it's looking back and thinking, I would do anything to go back to that moment to be able to change it. And you can't. And I think that's the bit that eats me up the most, is that it doesn't matter how much I know now what he should have had or what we want as memories, we haven't got them, and there's nothing I can do to change that.
I would say to you though, is try not to allow that to eat away at you, because if you look at, let's say, anything in life that we do, hindsight is a really wonderful thing.
Yeah.
Because there are lots of things that we do on a daily basis where we would say, if only I had done this, or if only they had done this. And the one thing you can't do is you can't change it.
No.
So having thoughts like that, I would imagine a lot of it is guilt. A lot of it is guilt of like you were saying, I wish I had of said X, Y, and Z. And because I didn't, that's going to eat away at me. Now, I'm not going to sit here and say, you've got nothing to feel guilty about, because it doesn't matter how much somebody turns around and says, you've got nothing to feel guilty about. It doesn't eliminate the feeling of guilt or the feeling of not being at, or the feeling of being at that time and not doing what you wish now that you had have done.
Mm-hmm.
That will go over time, because that's how guilt works. Guilt will just go over time, because it's just the natural.
We spoke about this recently, actually, because it's been 16 years for Ryan and Amy this year with Lily.
There's things now that I think to myself, I remember when we went back to speak to the consultant after we'd lost Lily, and we went back for the post-mortem results and the way that she said things to us, because of there were things that she said. And I think to myself, how on God's earth can a consultant have said that to me? But then I also think to myself, well, actually, that's the way that, unfortunately, some consultants are, because they're very black and white.
Well, yeah.
And there are things that I wish I'd asked at the time, or things I wish that we'd followed through on at the time and things like that. And over time, they dissipate, because you realise that hindsight is a wonderful thing, and there is no way of being able to go back and change that.
No.
So therefore you learn to not beat yourself up about it.
Yeah.
I'm not saying by any means you shouldn't do that, because you're in a place at the moment where that is,
I think, because it's fresh again.
It's consuming you.
I had sort of 5 years four and a half years to process, you know, what we had.
Yeah.
And then suddenly this whole new, oh, but you could have had this.
It's like Pandora's box has been reopened.
Yeah. And
after that gap as well.
I wish it hadn't. Yeah. Because it has reopened those, like you said, those feelings of guilt of why didn't I do that in that moment?
Yeah.
And again, I think it leads me back to, that's why I try and give him now a legacy in a different way of being able to help others. Yeah, that's what fuels me to, I get, like you said, get not get rid of the grief or the guilt, but to move it in a different direction is to use bring positivity to others.
Yeah, I was just about to say, you're using the guilt that you feel. Even though, and I'm going to say, you shouldn't feel guilty, you're using that guilt as a good for others.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think that's what drives it, I guess. Yeah. And, you know, like I said, the fact that I know that maybe babies in the future who are born around Rupert's gestation or in that second trimester will be treated differently because of his experience and our experience, then I can make peace with our experience, knowing it might help
that he's,
someone else.
Because he's leaving a legacy.
Yeah.
How are you and Jack as a husband and wife at this point in terms of reacting to each other, because there'll be the moments that obviously you're going through, both of you are going through finding out that you've lost your child and reacting your own ways apart and then together. How was your dynamic in that moment, if you don't mind me asking?
I think we definitely grieved differently. I am more of I wear my heart on my sleeve. I cry quite openly, quite often, where I don't think Jack cried until Rupert's funeral. I think I didn't see the emotion actually come out of him until the funeral. I think he was
that in
tall.
Front of you, obviously,
well,
yes, maybe on his own.
No, on his own. He didn't cry either. And it's not because he wasn't sad. It's just the way he was processing it. And I think bits from other people, be strong for Lauren now. Make sure you're there for Lauren now. And I'm sure as men, you've heard the same things. People want to
over
put
to
women in the, you know, the forefront of their minds. And they were almost saying to him, not openly saying, you know, don't you cry in front of Lauren. But I think they were giving him that precedent of you have to be
man
the
up.
One that holds it together now. And I don't know if that did have a long-lasting effect on how he's been able to process his grief. I think even now, I don't think he ever has fully sort of been able to open up about how it was to him. Even during the delivery, he felt so out of place because he was watching me go through all this and didn't know what to do, that he was directing people or asking if he could be the one to change the bed sheets or directing people to where they needed to go in the room, because he felt useless.
He'd feel part of
he
it,
felt
yeah.
like he couldn't, he didn't know what to do in that moment.
I can honestly say there's been times in my life where I felt like a spare part, but my God, did I feel like a fish out of water when Amy was giving birth to Lily. I get where how he's feeling, because you cannot do anything. Like, I remember holding Amy's hand and every single push from a contraction, like she's squeezing harder and harder and harder. And I'm thinking, squeeze me harder, because I want to be put through a little bit of pain here. That
oh, you're doing the holding the hand, yeah.
I felt helpless, like proper helpless. Didn't know what to do, didn't know what to say, didn't know where to look, didn't know. Just wanted the ground to swallow me up.
Did Jack have any counselling or any anything together?
There wasn't anything available. It was offered to me.
It wasn't offered to Jack.
No,
that's amazing.
Which again, I think it is that stereotypical.
Yeah.
Men just need to get on with it.
Well, the reason why I'm asking that is because, again, I'm going to refer. I'll put links to these episodes in the description. There is one in particular which stands out. I think you'll know who I might. It's Ian Lawton. One of our early episodes back when we were still on Zoom, and they were offered some counselling, and they went to. It was like a couple's one for bereavement, and he felt like, to use Ryan's phrase, fish out of water, because I don't think the counsellor. Sorry, is it counsellor? Is that right?
Yeah.
They weren't, he felt like they weren't looking at him.
No, sorry, ignore me. It was a support group.
Support group, yeah, sorry, yeah, that's right. Support group, and he just felt like there's no point in me being there. It was all aimed towards her. And so he stopped going, but then he found a male-only support group. And I think he was at odds going, well, it makes it about me and I should be together with my other half. But he went, and he's now, it said it just changed his world.
Wow.
And he's now made some of his best friends, who are the other men in that group, because all of a sudden, you know, it's like, it's guys, as soon as you have that common ground, and there's, even if it's just talking to, having a bit of banter about something like as silly as football for a few minutes, but you're going, okay, this guy's all right. And it starts from there. And that really changed where he was heading mentally. And I think from that, he wrote a book, done like 10 marathons in a week. And also running for Hank, wasn't it?
Yeah.
His boy was called Hank.
He said he found his tribe.
He found his tribe. That was it.
Oh, that's nice, isn't it?
And that was one of the reasons why I've just brought it up. Because it's a theme, again, that comes around a lot. Yeah. And it's interesting that you mentioned that, because Jack wasn't even offered anything.
No, he wasn't.
How is he now?
He's okay. I still don't think he has processed it fully.
Yeah.
Again, I think our life outside of Rupert and baby loss is so chaotic that you don't really get time to process things anyway.
Distractions.
But then,
so
he has played a couple of games of football for a football team run by the Millie Hope Trust,
okay.
Who are a lovely trust that raised money for Tiny Tickers and other baby loss things.
Tiny Tickers, that's heart it is. Charity, isn't
yes.
it?
Yes. Yeah. So Sam, Millie's mum, and Steve, Millie's dad, Millie did have a heart condition, and so they set up the Millie Hope Trust in her memory. We've come to be good, really good friends with Millie, Millie's mum and dad.
Yeah.
And I'm sure they won't mind me talking about her on here because she is, you know, their legacy.
Yeah.
So Millie lived for a month. She spent her life in Birmingham Children's Hospital.
Yeah.
And so Steve has set up the football team sort of for bereaved dads.
Brilliant.
Try and get a game against them.
I think that would be wonderful.
Because we've got a team here at the charity.
Oh, yeah, that's probably a better idea. Sorry, I was thinking we should set up a game against them. My initial thought was, can we poach him for our team?
Yeah. Well, if he is, yeah, if he's, you know, we'll get him across.
So and again, fine. He did it for a similar reason. He didn't have anyone really to talk to. And
that team sport community thing, I think for guys in particular, as a way of opening up is massive, absolutely massive.
Last October, they did a game for Millie's birthday as a fundraiser. And then for Christmas, they came round with a football shirt for Jack with Rupert's name on the back.
Oh, nice. Brilliant.
And it's the first time in a long time that I've really seen that emotion in him. It meant so much to him that someone else had acknowledged him as Rupert's dad and gone out of their way to give him the football shirt. And it's such a small gesture, but it means the absolute world because it's, again, as we were saying, I think before the podcast, that sometimes it's just seeing your baby's name written down.
Mm.
It's sometimes just using your baby's name in the context of being their parents still, that I think that is what means so much. And I think the fact that someone else had gone out of their way to say, you belong on this football team as Rupert's dad, and everyone will know that when you are wearing this shirt. It really...
It's validation, isn't it?
100%.
Yes. And it meant so, so much to him. And I know he hasn't played yet. They played a game a couple of weeks ago, but he hasn't been in it yet. And I know he cannot wait to wear that shirt. And for Millie's birthday game, at the beginning, the bereaved dads, there was four of them that played, and they all did a flare at the beginning of the game. And the power of just seeing these men stood so proudly it's unreal. And I think there's a really big missed opportunity for men to show that, again, they are parents to those children as well. Because, okay, yes, women, we are the ones that carry the babies and ultimately give birth to the babies or lose the babies, but you lose the babies too.
Yeah.
You still lose your baby 10 years on, 16 years on, it doesn't change the fact that you are still their dad. And I think it's lost on men, and there's still this stigma around how strong men are supposed to be, and men aren't supposed to cry, and men aren't supposed to feel sad, and it's just not the way it is at all in reality. And
I love that you're saying these things, because we've said it a lot, but to hear it coming from your man,
I think living it, and seeing that effect that it has on your own husband when you know that he's being told to be strong for me.
Yeah.
Who gives someone else the right to say, be strong for me? Yeah. I want him to show me emotion, actually. That's what I needed in that moment. I needed to know that we were on the same page.
Mm.
And I think he was so conflicted between his own thoughts and needing to be strong because people were telling him to. And I didn't need that. I didn't need him to be a solid wall. Because our reality in that moment was heartbreaking for both of us.
Jessica and Luke Perry, we had them on two parts, and Jessica, more or less.
Jessica, word for word, weren't it?
Yeah, but exactly what you said about Luke. In fact, I think it was the intro of one of the episodes. It's like, I just wanted to see him show something. And for him, he's like... Oh.
But there's strength in showing emotion.
Yeah,
there is. There is
strength in showing emotion, the strength in showing it and laying everything out there when you feel like you need to.
Yeah, and I actually think it's quite unhealthy to bottle that up and absolutely. Pretend you're not feeling it, because it will come out at some point.
Oh, yeah, it will.
Whether that's one way or another.
10 years down the line, it's going to show in you.
Yeah.
If you're not supported in the right way. And
absolutely.
I think there's a big part of the lost community that is too quiet, and it's the side of dads.
I couldn't agree more, and it will come out in a number of ways, isn't it? Whether it's, I mean, we refer to them on the show as distractions, and they can be good ones. They, you know, some people throw themselves into work. It can be bad ones. Some people may develop a habit, whether it's drinking, whether it's gambling, whether it's drugs, you know. So again, as we, one of the mottos we've had, which wasn't an intentional one, but it's kind of organically grown over the time we've done this, which is men talk a lot of bollocks, but it's amongst that bollocks that we find actually where we're heading with that. It's like a vehicle for the conversation. It's that, you know, it's conducive to actually having the conversations that we need to have. But the first thing that we need to have is just our gums flapping in the first place and just start talking and just say something. Doesn't matter how long it takes, it will get there.
Yeah.
You mentioned, you said you wanted to talk about the naivety of other people.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Could you break that down a little bit?
I could do another hour on the naivety of other people.
We might have to get you back at some point. I did see when Ryan had your Instagram page up, there's one post and it just said, ugh, people.
Yeah, I saw that.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
What prompted that word? What was in your head that day which made you go, right?
Oh, gosh. I think that might have been something. I think it was a culmination of people on that day that just did things that wound me
up. Just tip you over the edge.
But I think people feel like they need to say something.
Yeah.
Very rarely it's the right thing in that moment. We had mainly, at least you've still got Noah.
Yeah.
It was, don't worry that you're going through this. I had a comment, and I'm not going to name any names. I was still pregnant, and I'd sort of shared the news of what we were going through. Yeah. And it was a, you'll get over this and have lots more babies.
Ooh.
I want the baby I'm still carrying right now.
Do you think
now.
They could tell me what the lottery numbers are? Because clearly they know what's going to happen.
Honestly.
I still can't get my head around this of when people, because I haven't lost myself. So our first ever episode was the elephant in the room, and I wanted to understand it more because these are my friends and how to talk and how to not say things like that.
Mm-hmm.
And I think there is an element of having an emotional intelligence, because some people are just, they just don't get it just in any walk of life, do they?
No.
But I still can't think that person's going, that's fixed them.
Yeah,
they'll be all right now. Go me.
Yeah,
I'm like you're supposed to go. Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Well, thank you.
I didn't think of that.
I'm off to Waitrose now. Everything's fine.
Yeah. I lost my dog, and that was really sad. So I know what you're going through. Yeah.
I love my dog, right? And I'll be devastated when she goes. But I'm not going to compare her to losing Callie. Fuck's sake. Fuck me. You know what, right? I'll be honest with you. I'm not turning into a knobhead, honestly, but I feel
like... Because you're already one.
Yeah. I feel like even more so this year, and I do think you two have said it as you get older, I'm finding myself having less tolerance.
Because you're hanging around Ryan.
No, yeah, but, my tolerance is shocking. I've got no tolerance for...
Not that I'm joining, not that I'm changing, so I won't, and Dan calls me a... walking hug, and I like that, and I think that's always going to be me, but I'm starting to have less tolerance. Yeah. I am, and I feel like I do.
I can't wait for the day he tells me to fuck off.
No, but
I want to be here for that.
But when you hear things like that, it's like my dad, my old man had a for me, and it's continued throughout my life, and I know I'm sitting with two people here who will back this up. My dad would say to me when I was younger, sometimes when I'd say things, please, son, can just engage your brain first. That's what he would say. He would say, engage your brain first.
And he never took any advice from
him. And he's still waiting for him to do that.
And I'm 42 and I'm still trying to get there. But just think.
Yeah. I honestly do think that most people, not all people.
I don't think they mean it, maybe.
No. I did have one particular, and again, you'll probably want to film this reaction. I had one friend who was looking at the pictures of Rupert, so in his little album that the hospital had taken, and said, I can't wait to have more babies. I can't wait to have more babies. And then asked if they could see my 7-seater because they would need a bigger boot and a bigger car when they had more babies. Still holding the album of Rupert.
What's wrong with people? I
don't, see your boot.
I know. I weirdly don't think it's not intentionally. They're not saying I'm setting out to make you upset.
No,
it's
dumb.
Not thinking.
It's not intentional. I don't think it's made with hate.
I think it's those people. For me, it's those people who say those type of things again.
Yeah.
As well. It once is bad enough, but if they say the same kind of things again,
yeah,
yeah,
just. just go away.
I remember somebody saying to me once, actually, when I was actually taking the dog for a walk, and it was a lady who lived round the corner, knew her, but I didn't particularly know her that well.
Yeah,
but
okay.
Our next door neighbour, sadly, they lost their daughter when she was, I think she was about 14. She got peanut allergy and was out with a friend and had an anaphylactic shock, and it killed her. And I think it was the anniversary of her death, and she might have been 18 or something like that on that anniversary. And I remember the lady saying to me, we were talking about the charity and stuff, "Shit, I don't know what's worse, you know, losing her at 14 or going through what you've gone through. It must be worse that, you know, she died when she was 14. And I'm thinking, why would you even try and think one is worse? You can't compare them. It's not a fucking competition.
Do you think that's human instinct in a way? Because we do tend to compare everything.
I'll
be
honest, I just think it's how fucking stupid she was. Yeah. Because that was her. That she was just a dipsy div. Okay. Do you know what I mean?
Dipsy like div. Trying to. Sounds just, like the Teletubbies.
Yeah, it does, yeah. Just trying. That's where Dipsy is now, yeah.
Is that the surname?
But yeah, you're right. You're absolutely. Yeah. What on earth it makes people think that. It's a game of comparing. No. You know, I sat there and thought, oh, yeah, my loss isn't as bad as theirs because they lost their daughter when she was 40. Oh, yeah, yeah.
Doesn't even come into your space.
Just to underline what Matt said, to do it repeatedly, that shows a real just low level of, brains.
Yeah. But those are the people that aren't around me anymore.
Yeah.
And I had a friend that was due to be married. And if COVID hadn't been a thing, she would have already been married twice. So they kept moving their date, if you like, because of COVID once and COVID twice. And in between the second and the third time, I was asked to be bridesmaid, which afterthought or to begin with. And you're like,
oh, right, yeah.
And then I got pregnant with Rupert, and then I lost Rupert.
Yeah.
And so I was in a state of grief anyway. Mm. And I used my Instagram page, I think we spoke about this earlier, to sort of connect with other lost families, and it's the only world I wanted to be a part of. I didn't really want to engage with normal conversations. I just wanted to talk about my grief. And we were in Butlins, actually. We'd taken Noah on a little holiday just to sort of get away.
Good old Butlins.
Butlins, it was wonderful.
Which one?
Bognor Regis.
Bognor Butlins. Yeah, I've been that one.
Never been.
It was lovely. It was really nice, and it was really good to sort of clear your head. But there were pregnant people everywhere. It was Tots week, so there were toddlers with mums and pregnant people, and I had a lady tap me on the shoulder on the queue for the slide and said, "Do you think I'm going to be allowed on this because I'm pregnant and I'm not sure if," and I thought, oh my God, why have you asked me?
Yeah.
Ask anybody else but me.
Or just read the fucking signs.
Yeah. Why are you asking me?
Oh, you see that man dressed in the yellow? Go and ask him.
just do it anyway.
Not the lifeguard. I took to my Instagram page and sort of had a bit of a talk about how difficult I was finding seeing pregnant people everywhere. Anyway, I wake up the next day to a message from the bride-to-be's sister asking me or telling me to step down as bridesmaid because it wasn't my friend's job to worry about my grief on her wedding day.
Wow.
And I was demoted. I'm not allowed to be bridesmaid anymore.
Telling me to step down. Oh, that's awkward.
Yeah.
Like it's a job role.
We aren't friends anymore.
Good.
Mm. Oh, wow.
I don't think
I've got any words.
I think Lauren has brought some stuff in today, but I've...
Did you say that was on a message?
On a message, on a text message of...
Did you respond, by the way?
Yeah, I did. I basically said, I won't fucking come at all then.
There we go.
Good.
There we go.
It's cowardly. And in situations like that, it's got to be a call. It's got to be face-to-face, ideally, but not a text.
Do you know what?
Can't be text.
I think I'd have sent some laughing faces.
I feel like they felt like I was going to stand up, make a speech, big sign, I am grieving. You know, I don't know what they expected.
Been watching
me
too many
to
episodes of Black Mirror, aren't they?
The bride to be was adamant that she had nothing to do with these messages.
Was it the maid of honor? Sorry,
the bride's sister.
Oh, the sister.
I was very glad in the end to have not been there because...
Yeah, sounds like you dodged one.
Yeah, and I didn't attend at all, even as a guest, because how...
You can't come back from that.
You don't need people like that in your life.
You can't come back from
that. And ironically, I was pregnant at her wedding with my rainbow baby. I wasn't there, but I found out that I was pregnant, I think, the day after she got married. But I never was intending to openly grieve at her wedding and somehow ruin her wedding day by...
You'd have somehow stuck a mask on.
If they're truly a friend...
My response would have been, I hope you shit yourself in your wedding dress.
But if you're truly a friend, you want them there because it's a day of celebration, day of celebrating life. And you need to be there for it.
But it's interesting
because I can't get my head around that.
It's interesting because we've talked about this before, haven't we? Where like, listen, I know it's a wedding day, it's the biggest day of the year for them, blah, blah, but it comes back to this, and this is where I've lost people as well on my journey, and we've talked about it before. It has to be about them. And what I'm getting around to is I've talked to people about this with grief before, where people can't understand people's comments or feelings around it. And genuinely, people do have to put themselves above people who are grieving at this point within their life. Yeah. And just allow them to grieve. Like, it comes back to this competition thing, doesn't it?
But it was really strange because she took Rupert's funeral flowers and had them made into a resin piece for me. And she was really there for me during that initial time. And I couldn't believe that our friendship had taken such a nosedive into, I think you've been grieving a bit too long now and this might spoil...
I was just about to say that. I wonder if that's what her thoughts were, is that she probably thought, or whoever thought, oh, well, you've done enough grieving now. You should be able to just
and it was
crack on.
And the openness of my Instagram, you know, opening up to the Lost community. And suddenly that was my first moment of, am I a bit too open in my grief? And should I shut down? No. And actually, I don't talk on my Instagram anymore. I would, you know, sit with a camera and have a chat, and I don't do that anymore. I only type or put pictures because I think it really put me off.
Yeah.
Someone is looking at me and saying, this is too much.
But, you know, I'll say this again with every social media, isn't it? People don't want to see it. Don't look at it.
No.
It's,
no.
I,
and I'm very
because
glad
you
there
need
are
to do what
still do.
Yeah.
That, you know, that it hasn't put other people
precisely. Because you need to do what you need to do. And it's not about other people, is it?
Do it, Lauren. No. I sing about it, so do it.
Yeah, Matt's
go
big,
ahead.
Matt's right. Big on that.
I wouldn't call it singing.
It's one thing I'm really glad that I've done today. Because
absolutely.
It's that turnaround of, actually, I am going to sit and talk about my grief.
Lauren, you've been absolutely fascinating. Yeah. Some of the insights and the way that you've spoke about them as well.
And the bear you've brought, the bear.
And Rupert the bear is joining us in the studio, who I had to stop myself from making a Butlins redcoat comment when you were talking about Butlins a minute ago.
This is a new addition.
Oh, is it?
He actually came with. We purchased a blue ribbon that had his name on his birthday. This came from a charity shop bear, but I felt it was for Valentine's Day.
It works.
And it works for him.
Thank you so much for joining us. Is there anything that you haven't mentioned that you'd like to get off your chest before we wrap this episode up?
I don't think so. One of the things that I was going to talk about, but I think it's gonna take a lot longer than, you know, wrapping it up, was the baby loss project that I do every year.
Oh, yeah. No, mention it. Go for it.
Okay. So I've done it for 4 years now, and it came from a place of the first Baby Loss Awareness Week, we wanted to go to a service. I think it was your service.
Okay.
And we had no childcare, and we missed out on our first Baby Loss Awareness service, and we were devastated because we felt like it was our first real opportunity to go and sort of be with other bereaved parents. And so I really wanted to do something that didn't rely on childcare that I could put in place where I could bring people together.
Yeah.
So I started a ribbon project just with the Lost community that I had found through Instagram. And I think the first year I did it, I had about 60 to 80 babies' names on blue, pink or yellow ribbons tied up onto the lake at Arrow Valley in Redditch.
Right.
And then I've done it every year since. And every year, devastatingly, there are more. As I've connected with more people and inevitably as more people have joined the Baby Loss community, or found out about the project and wanted to be involved. And this year, so October just gone, there were over 400 ribbons at the lake, and they were all written on by me. I'd sit at the table and write each ribbon, and I say each baby's name out loud as I write them, because I think it's really important to acknowledge they're not a name on a ribbon. They are a baby. Yeah. They are someone's child.
100%.
And I think it's a really important part of it, because that might be the only time that someone else says that baby's name out loud, apart from the parents themselves. Yeah. And I like to know that I am commemorating them.
Yeah.
And I want to keep that going. I want to do it every year, because it's somewhere that has become really meaningful to a lot of people. People go down there, and so I'll put them up in the end of September or the start of October, ready for Baby Loss Awareness Week.
Well, that makes me think, because we do mini episodes for Baby Loss Awareness Week every year. So I'm thinking, they're only 10-minute episodes, and we're thinking you should, especially with doing that, you should be one of our guests, because we get different guests on.
I'd love to.
Previous guests, so that you'll be one of our, so that'll be, and obviously we'll make a big deal of that as well.
Obviously, up until, so sort of from July time, I start collecting names. Okay. I keep the names. So if your baby was there on year one, they will still be there on year five. I don't say, well, you've got to sign up again. They stay with me. And, brilliant. You know, that's important, because there are people that, you know, might take a break from their baby loss page, and they might take a break from the baby loss community, but their baby still gets to be remembered. But sort of from July time, I will start collecting new names, and I want to know that if anyone listens to this and thinks, I'd love my baby to be on a ribbon, that they can contact me and they can...
Is that through your Instagram again? Yes. Okay, links in the description for that.
They can find me and they can be part of the project. I always say this phrase very loosely, because I say I want it to be big, or I don't. I wish it was.
It's an odd one, isn't it? Yeah.
And so when I say I want it to be bigger, what I mean is I want anybody who wants to be involved in it to be able to be involved in it. And that's whether you lost your baby this year.
Yeah.
That's whether you lost your baby 20 years ago and think, gosh, I haven't done anything yet to commemorate my baby, or I haven't done anything in the last decade and I really want to still have someone else remember them. That project is sort of an open thing for everyone. Yeah. And again, it leaves Rupert a legacy of doing something for others. And I think that's just what I aim to do.
I think you're brilliant. Yeah, I think you're, I mean, and again, without any platitudes, because as I mentioned to you off air, there's only been one knobhead who's come on this podcast over all the, and it's not Ryan, over all the years.
It's Matt.
But still, every guest has a story. And it's about, I just think you've got such a big heart. And the way that you... underlined by the fact that you're apologising to the midwife and also with the sorry to bring it up again, but with the handprint, the footprints, and your reaction to the people who were there, such an, as Ryan said, an empath. And but I think you're brilliant, and everything that you're doing and the effect that's going to have on the other bereaved families who get some of the support from you that you didn't get at the time when you needed it. And I think that's just incredible.
Thank you. That's really kind. I find compliments quite
I can tell. It's all right. You should meet my wife. She hates them.
I think it comes from a place of, I see so many people do such amazing things, like seeing what you do as a charity and seeing what other charities do and how many bereaved parents turn their grief into love for others and care for others. It's sometimes you feel not insignificant in what you do, but it feels like I just find it hard to
if you go off the Tesco analogy, every little helps, and it doesn't matter how much somebody does if it's if it's one tiny little thing, it's adding to a library of support that's out there from so many different organisations.
Yeah, and I think every single person who offers support in someone's darkest time is, you know, it's invaluable.
Well, they
it?
Don't have to, and that's the way I look at it, is that those people that do give their time to support other people, they don't have to do it.
No.
They're choosing to do it, and they're choosing to do it to make somebody else's life that little bit easier at their darkest time.
Yeah, and I know that I've had people say to me, after signing up for your February challenge, how much of an impact you as a charity have had on them. And they were they were so grateful to your support as a charity because it got them through the darkest times. And so actually, to sort of repay the compliment, I'm honoured to be on the podcast because it's been amazing from Christmas time and coming into the office and then being back here and speaking to so many people about what you do. I think it's incredible work as a charity.
Thank you.
Thank you. We hate compliments. Yeah. That's great. And we will speak to you again during Baby Loss Awareness Week in October. Lauren, thank you so much for coming on. And we'll speak to you again later on this year during Baby Loss Awareness Week.
Thank you for having me.
Cheers, Ryan.
Cheers, Dan.
Cheers, Matt.
Bye, everyone.
And we'll be back very, very soon on our next episode of the Still Parents Podcast. Take care, everyone.
Adios.
The Still Parents Podcast is proudly supported by Global's Make Some Noise. Click details in the description to find out more.